Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the automobile. Well, folks, today is the running of the Great American Race. It's the 68th running of the Daytona 500, and I'm going to have a lot to talk about the Daytona race. We'll also catch you up on an IndyCar test that's going to be happening this week for free out at Phoenix Raceway. We'll also talk about gas prices, and of course, wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, from the pages of ESPN, it says the 2026 Daytona 500 preview, your cheat sheet for the Great American Race. Over 68 years, the world's greatest stock car racers have descended on the white sands of eastern Florida to compete in the most coveted and checkered flagged event that the sport has to offer. Actually, they've been coming here for a little longer than that. High horsepower machinery started barreling down these sands all the way back in 1902. But in 1959, when Big Bill France rolled a bulldozer and where he could find and constructed a 2.5-mile D-shaped oval with 31-degree banking, stacked up 40 feet wide, 20 feet tall, and then the racing moved inland, and the Daytona 500 was born. Much like last weekend's big NFL game in Santa Clara, the sizable percentage of this week's audience who only watch one NASCAR race per year. Perhaps you're one of those people. Perhaps you're one of my people who have a bronze Richard Petty bust on his desk, which he totally does, and describe the results of any failures around the house until it's done blowed up. Well, no matter your level of NASCAR knowledge, the Daytona 500 preview is for you, a cheat sheet for the Great American Race. Facts and figures that allow you to look up from your nachos and blow the minds of some of your friends and family when suddenly you dial up some gearhead smarts. So slip on that vintage Mark Martin number 6 Viagra Ford t-shirt you had since you were a giggling teenager and you paid way too much at the thrift store, which fortunately I have stuff to do that from the Goodwill. Dab a little WD-40 behind your ears, throw an old tire in the back fire pit, and read on. All right, five favorites for the Daytona 500. Well, the annual pre-race weekend, a stroll through the garage, folks in their splashy fire suits. So, well, who are you going to have to beat on Sunday? Resulted in five most memorable names, and none of those are going to be surprises. It begins with the Team Penske teammates, Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney, who finished 1 and 2 in their 150 dual race. Despite the aerodynamic drag behind Blaney's hedgerow mustache he is now sporting, the peers mentioned that they were drafting with each other, followed closely by Daytona 500 champion Denny Hamlin, and William Byron. As William Byron's Hendrick Motorsports teammate Chase Elliott, the winner of the second race on Thursday night, the son of two-time Daytona 500 champion. There's more to talk about that later. Five more to watch. The garage also has its collective eye on these guys. Chris Buescher, who drives for Roush Fenway Racing, who is also with Brad Keselowski, co-owned by NASCAR legend Jack Roush, and Fenway Sports Group. You might know these guys. They own the Boston Red Sox. And driver Brad Keselowski, who still drives for the team, has his name in it. Also a couple other people. Bubba Wallace, who has had some luck at this race, a pair of guys that have also won the Daytona 500, Austin Dillon, the driver of the number 3 car, which was the car that Dale Earnhardt drove, and 2022 winner of the Daytona 500, Austin Cindric, who also drives for Penske. Well, a year ago, William Byron was on that five more to watch list, and I received a few comments about that. Yes, his 24. Yes, that's the same car Jeff Gordon used to drive. Gordon retired, and now he's Byron's boss. Seemingly came out of nowhere to win the sport's biggest race for the second consecutive year last year and joined the NASCAR exclusive club, just the fifth to ever repeat as a Daytona 500. Other ones? Richard Petty, Cale Yarborough, Sterling Marlin, and Denny Hamlin, who did it in 2019 and 2020. Hamlin has a total of 3, which ties him with other drivers, including Gordon, on the third 3-time list. Should he pick up another win, it would bump him into a tie for second with other drivers as Cale Yarborough. And who's at the top of that list? Yep, Mr. The King from Disney, from the Pixar Cars, that's right, Richard Petty, he's won the Daytona 500 seven times. Now, while injured is a time-honored stock car tradition, this will be no exception. NASCAR Hall of Famer Ricky Rudd famously raced with a swollen eyelid taped open after a brutal crash and actually won. Daytona's first champion, Red Byron, who raced on the Daytona Beach, had a leg full of World War II shrapnel that had to be bolted to the clutch pedal. Yeah, they bolted his foot to the clutch pedal. Hamlin, who had a heartbreaking season, losing his father to injuries, suffered in a house fire in December. His mother was also in a long medical recovery. While sifting through the remains in the rubble of his home, or their home, Hamlin tore his right shoulder that he had surgically repaired 3 years ago, and he'll have to have another surgery, but he can't do that until the season is over, and that's not till November. Quote, "I'd be lying if I told you I'm 100% here," confessed Wednesday, "but the hope is once I get in the car, that will be my escape." Meanwhile, Brad Keselowski broke his right femur during a family ski trip in mid-December and admitted this weekend that he was worried he might miss the Daytona 500. After sitting out the Clash exhibition race, he had not received clearance for the Daytona 500 until just this past Monday. He said the pain is the worst he's ever dealt with, including a gruesome ankle injury he suffered after a road course accident 15 years ago. He is now using a cane to get around the garage. Now, wait. Brad Keselowski has never won the Daytona 500? Nope, he has not won. He's one of the other big names in the field. He's one of five series champions that have never won Daytona. Let's start with Kyle Busch. 63 career wins. Ninth in all-time wins in NASCAR. He's 0-20 at the Daytona 500, and his best finish is second back in 2019. Brad Keselowski, 36 career wins, 25th best. 0-16 at Daytona. Best finish, third in 2014. How about this one? Kyle Larson. 29 wins, defending series champion, 0-12 in the Daytona 500. His best finish is seventh. Chase Elliott, 19 career wins, son of two-time winner Bill Elliott, who's 0-10 in the Daytona 500. His best finish, second. Ryan Blaney, 17 career wins, 23 cup champion, 0-11 in Daytona, his best finish twice, second. He's done it twice, 2017 and 2020. They're all going for that big prize, the ginormous cup. Not a single NASCAR award is any bigger than this. It's the Harley J. Earl Trophy handed over to the Daytona 500 winner. Earl was a legendary mid-20th century designer producing machineries that look like spaceships on wheels, including the one that's welded to the top of the Daytona 500. He's also one of the visionaries behind the creation of the Chevrolet Corvette. Speaking of Chevys in design, there are 19 Chevy Camaros in the field of the 41 cars versus 10 Mustangs and 12 Toyota Camrys. So they will look different than they looked last year. Beside the bowtie domination of the annual manufacturer's title, this year's change on the hood, side panels, and the nose are relatively subtle. But the nose, well, that's what everybody's curious about. Why? Because in those tight conga line racing of Daytona, cars banging bumpers as they push each other forward, those new nose shapes will hopefully help with that 190-mile-an-hour jigsaw puzzle. And, of course, trying to avoid the big one, the crash that eats racers in bunches. So what do you mean Busch has never won it? And he's in a Chevy? Yes and yes. And there's another yes. He's on the pole for today's running. First time he's ever started the 500 from the number one starting spot. On paper, that sounds awesome, but it also leads us to one of the craziest Daytona 500 stats, and this will tell you about the wackiness of the event. The last time a racer who started first and finished first, well, that was Dale Jarrett in 2000, 26 years ago. That's so long ago that Connor Zillich, who's making his Daytona 500 using the same car number that Jarrett made famous then, wasn't even born yet. Well, let's talk about Grand Marshals. Well, the Daytona 500 has always drawn famous people. And this year, well, that's no different. The Grand Marshal is comedian and Vanderbilt superfan Nate Bargatze. He's joined by the honorary pace car driver Kurt Russell, long before he was Wyatt Earp or the Star-Lord, deadbeat dad. Heck, he was in the computer wore tennis shoes. Russell was a national championship racer. Also expect to see in the house Michael Jordan, who's the co-owner of 2311 Racing with Denny Hamlin. He's also the owner who co-sued NASCAR's antitrust lawsuit, and thankfully that was settled in December. Rams wide receiver Puka Nakuka, who also co-starred in 2311 Wallace's Super Bowl commercial. Also, don't forget any pointers, like you can visit the Lightning McQueen display. There's also going to be a fan zone or smack dab in the middle of the Cup Series garage, because this marks the 20th anniversary of the Cars movie. All right, three more things you can shout out when it seems like you're really dialed into Daytona, because three is for Earnhardt. Well, you can shout this anytime you see someone wearing a black number three t-shirt. I can't believe it's been 25 years. That's right. Dale Earnhardt died 25 years ago on September 18th, 2001, in the final turn on the final lap of the Daytona 500. To millions, it's been a startling moment in sports history. The sport's biggest star killed during the sport's biggest event. But safety changes have been implemented after the seven-time series champion's death resulted in exactly zero deaths in NASCAR's top three series since that day. For more information, revisit our in-depth four-part series that we did for the 20th anniversary of the Daytona 500 in 2021. Number two, shout this during pit stops. Hey, I've seen that dude play football. Well, when I first covered my first Daytona 500 in 1996, pit crews were made up of mechanics from the shop who spent the weekends building the cars, freely smoking Winston cigarettes while consuming lots of cheeseburgers and beer. Now, they're finely tuned athletes who study film and practice their four-tire stops and fuel orchestration to the point where they pull off pit stops in a quarter of the time they used to. All of them are former collegiate athletes, some from hockey, some from baseball, lots of former football players. Teams scout this talent via an NFL-style combine, and also has former players from dozens of programs like Alabama, Penn State, Clemson, and Virginia Tech. Hendrix Motorsports, who pioneered the football to pit crew movement nearly 30 years ago, initially laughed when they opened up a 35,000-foot performance center for their pit crews. And number three, holler when you see there are 10 laps to go. They're gonna wreck. Yes, okay. To say this every year, it's true. But for 67 years, it has been true. During the 68th year race, it'll be true as well. And for 68 years from now, it'll still be true. Back in the day, you might see Richard Petty and David Pearson skating through the grass toward the checkered flag like they did in 1976, or Yarborough fist fighting Bobby and Donnie Allison in turn three in the grass like they did in 1979. These are the days where parody of the modern Gen 7 cars added the fearlessness of today's racers to the annual demolition derby that once the 200 lap race gets down to 10 laps to go or less. See William Byron 1 year ago, who dragged around in the 20 mid race and then took the lead as the cars ended, and the big one, well, on lap 187, and that took out 16 cars. So that's it, folks. Daytona 500 is today. Now, some new news that just came up yesterday. NASCAR is moving the start time of the Daytona 500 up 1 hour because of the threat of bad weather. The green flag is now scheduled to go at 2:13 Eastern Standard Time. So over here in Arizona, that means the race is going to be at 12:13 start time. William Byron is going to be for the first driver to try to win the Daytona 500 for the third consecutive year. He won the race in overtime last year. And as we talked about, Kyle Busch is on the pole, and the first time he's ever led to the pole. And the race, folks, is going to be on Fox, and that is on Fox 10, and that's going to be starting in approximately 30 minutes. Two other big races that have run at Daytona right now. We had the Truck Series, and that was on Friday night, which was a wild race to watch. And Chandler Smith won that race, and he won by a margin of victory of 0.004 of a second. Gio Ruggiero finished in second. Christian Eckes finished in third. Ty Majeski in fourth. And John Nemechek finished in fifth. Yesterday, they ran the Xfinity, well, excuse me, it's going to be take me a little while. It's now called the Riley Auto Parts Series. It's been the Xfinity Series forever, which is the number two series in NASCAR. And that ran yesterday at Daytona. And Austin Hill, who won the race, and that's his 11th time winning a Super Speedway race. He is the master of Super Speedways in this series. Justin Allgaier finished in second. Ryan Sieg in third. Jordan Anderson in fourth. And Sammy Smith was finished fifth. And that was the running of the O'Reilly Auto Parts Series, which used to be called the Xfinity Series. A little IndyCar news, and Romain Grosjean completes the full field for IndyCar as his return to Dale Coyne Racing. Well, the full-time 2026 IndyCar grid has officially confirmation that Romain Grosjean will return to Dale Coyne Racing. The 39-year-old moved from Formula One to IndyCar with Coyne in 2021, shifted to Andretti Global for 22-23, spent 24 with Juncos Hollinger Racing before being sidelined last year and not racing in IndyCar. He's very excited to be back in Honda. We'll drive the number 10 Honda. He has not done much testing, so we'll have to see. But Romain Grosjean is coming back to IndyCar and driving for, that's right, Dale Coyne Racing. Well, speaking of IndyCars, which they will be here on March the 7th to race out at Phoenix Raceway, and we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. I want to let you know that there is a free IndyCar event out at Phoenix Raceway this week. And that is going to be on Wednesday, February the 18th. And it's called the Unser IndyCar Open Test. What's happening is you can join your friends out at Phoenix Raceway, February 18th, for the test. This is a free event. That's right, free event that requires no ticket or registration. You can just show up. Now, the first 300 fans to visit the Phoenix Raceway display in the Midway will receive a wristband granting them access to an IndyCar autograph session. And guests will get escorted through the pedestrian tunnel, and the autograph session will be located then. Concession stands will be open. The NASCAR weekend gate policy will be in effect. And Phoenix Raceway is a cashless facility, so you must bring your credit card if you want to buy anything. The gates open at 8:30 a.m. First IndyCar session is going to be from 9 a.m. until noon. There is going to be the autograph session from 12:45 to 1:15. And then from 1:30 to 4:30, the IndyCars will be back on the track. So if you've ever wanted to see an IndyCar run and would like to check it out, you can head out to Phoenix Raceway on Wednesday the 18th for a free IndyCar test. And you want some more information, just go to phoenixraceway.com. We've been talking about some of these automotive myths, what we're trying to set them straight. Well, here's one of them. A tire's age doesn't matter if there is tread on the tires. Well, the question is, does a tire expire? Now, one of those to manage and avoid. Even moderate degree of daily driving causes tread wear before the tire ages, which typically takes place when 5 or 6 years. A tire could have plenty of tread and safely last longer, but some manufacturers suggest up at the 10-year mark that they encourage regular inspection and to replace the tire. Tires are rubber, and rubber degrades. Internal cracks can develop even if the tires are in storage, setting stage for potentially a catastrophic failure on the road. If your tread level is good, well, it's going to leave a hole in your wallet and sadden your heart. But at some point, you just got to let them go. The risk is just not worth it. Even at your Cars for Coffee show, when someone comes out once a month, in that case, you can check the age of your tires by looking at the standardized DOT code on the sidewall. For any tire made after 2000, there are 4 digits that will tell you when they were made. The first 2 digits, the week, and the second 2 digits are the year. For tires made before 2000, well, you're already way past. You need to change those. The check engine light. It's just being dramatic. Well, the check engine light is a horrible and a terrible thing, sure. But also is an angry chimpanzee with a handgun. That doesn't mean you should ignore it when it's right in front of you. Yes, it's temperamental, and sometimes it's unclear, and often leads to more questions than answers. But that doesn't mean you can tune it out among your frustration with this intrusive banner ad on your favorite automotive website. Frustration is broad as you can indicate. That glowing yellow light means that there is something innocuous and maybe your fuel cap needs to be tightened. But while you think that modern vehicles are giving you a whole lot more clues on a spectrum of what might lie when those lights come on, just remember, no matter what your cousin says about the fact that rocking his check engine light since he's been rocking the car with a check engine light since the Obama administration, because he's still plugging along, that doesn't mean that check engine light or any other warning lights can be ignored. They're as close to a literal red flag for your automobile as much as you think you can get. And last but not least, electric vehicles require no regular maintenance. We've talked about this before and how EV maintenance and ownership isn't all cracked up what it's cracked up to be, but maybe because a lot of people say that. Well, the reality is that you don't have to worry about much other than plugging it in until your lease is up and then you throw it in the recycling bin. But the reality is that zero oil changes and brakes can last darn near forever. It's also worth noting electric vehicles have a whole bunch of other boring items like their internal combustion engine counterparts that do need to be addressed. Specifically, tires, suspension components, air filter cabins, and the like. Couple that with the fact that you're trading your big, demanding combustion engine for a giant battery that's going to have its own quirks and nuances, and you might feel like the scales could be balanced. It's not exactly a maintenance issue. The battery pack still needs to be properly charged, kept at a friendly temperature, and run responsibly. This sounds like zero maintenance bargain to you. That's great, but just remember, the maintenance isn't just zero. There are other things that do need to be concerned about and addressed. For weird and unusual automotive news, well, Patrick Winslow of Big Torch Key, Florida, celebrated his 57th birthday on style. According to WPLG-TV, around 11:30, he drove into the Conk Tour Train Depot in Key West and left his car running, with rock music blaring from the radio. He told the employees that he used to work for the company and wanted a tour of the train. Well, when he got to one of the trains, he took off. The employees were confused, thinking that he had permission to maybe take the little train for a drive. They were able to track Winslow with GPS. Police found him at the southernmost Point Buoy, where they said he exhibited rapid speech and appeared to be very excited. Winslow said he just borrowed the train because it was his birthday. Well, they also found a methamphetamine pipe in his pocket and charged him with burglary, grand theft auto, and possession of drug paraphernalia. He was held on bond for $60,000. Happy birthday, Patrick. Well, let's talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $2.92 a gallon. Here in Arizona, it's $3.14. Over in New Mexico, $2.65. In Colorado, $2.76. In Utah, $2.73. Over in Nevada, $3.63. California, $4.58. Hawaii, well, $4.40. So it's interesting that Hawaii's gas is cheaper than California's gas. And in Alaska, $3.50. How about this? Texas, $2.52. Oklahoma, $2.31 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on with our average gas prices here in Arizona. Well, the least expensive gas is still holding strong down in Tucson, $2.35 at the Arco station on Speedway Boulevard. The fast trip in Casa Grande, $2.37. The quick trip in Casa Grande, $2.39. And then, how about this? The Love's Travel Stop in Eloy is at $2.44 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on here in Metro Phoenix with our gas prices. Well, in Metro Phoenix, the least expensive gas used to be on the far east side, but now it's in Peoria. $2.69 at the Shell on 67th Avenue and Cactus Road. The quick trip at Baseline and 35th 4th Avenue and Baseline, that's at $2.72. The quick corner at 18th and Southern, $2.73. The Walmart at basically 80th Avenue in Peoria at $2.79. And the Arco station on Grand Avenue is at $2.79. So if you look out there, there's still some gas out there less expensive than $3 a gallon. But you got to look a little bit harder these days. We've come to that time in the show. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, why does my early 2000s Honda Civic make a clicking sound when the wheel straightens out? It happens every time I make a right or left-hand turn when the blinker is on. And that's from Luca. Well, it depends on the nature of the clicking sound, Luca. If it's a soft clicking sound that seems like it's coming from the area of your steering wheel, it could be related to the multifunctional switch. That's the steering column stalk that you use to activate your directional signals, better known as your turn signals, and your lights. Since you generally only turn the steering wheel one revolution either way during normal driving, so I wouldn't expect you to get multiple clicks when the wheel straightens out, but I suppose that is possible. So the first test, you want to try to replicate the noise without using your blinkers. So if there's no noise in your 20 plus year old multifunctional switch, well, that's probably the cause of your noise. But if you still get the clicking sound without using your turn signals or the multi-directional signals, it sounds more like it's coming from the front wheels. And if that's the situation, I'm going to expect it's going to be a bad CV joint. Now, the CV is a flexible joint that allows the axle to transmit power to the front wheels while still allowing those wheels to turn left and right and steer your car. Eventually, they wear out. And when they wear out, one of the first symptoms is often a clicking sound. Although, as a venerable sommelier of the fine art of car noises, I would say it sounds more like a clacking noise with metallic notes and a fine oaky finish. Now, bad CV joints tend to make noise when accelerating through a turn. So, for example, when you take off from a stoplight or when you turn left or right. So if you'd like to do some experimentation, I would go to a parking lot and turn the wheel all the way in one direction and then step on the gas. No noise? Well, try turning the wheel the other way and see if you can replicate that noise and figure out which side of the car this noise is coming from. Now, when you narrow it down or not, well, as an experienced mechanic or not so experienced mechanic, should be able to tell the difference between a multifunctional switch noise that's coming from the inside of the cabin and a CV joint that's coming from the front wheels inside the underneath the hood. So good luck with that. And I hope you find out your noise. Yeah, that's one of those situations where it should be fairly obvious that if that noise is coming from inside the cabin, and that's where the multifunctional switch, better known as the turn signal switch, but also your headlights are now on that switch as well, or it's coming from underneath the car, which was most likely going to be that CV joint, as he explained. So I hope they find out what happened with that car. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. You're listening to Jeff Wine on Sun Sounds Radio. We'll meet you back again next week on Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.